Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the Department of Energy CEAB meeting. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Later, we'll conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will be given at that time. If you should require assistance at any time, please press the star followed by the zero on your touch-tone phone, and an operator will assist you. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Monday, August 15, 2011, at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. I would now like to turn the conference over to our host, Chairman Bill Perry. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much, Ron. We're here to discuss a CEAB report on the shale natural gas. And this is an exceedingly important issue. On the one hand, it provides has the potential of providing the nation with a huge source of energy, thereby affecting positively our economy and thereby helping to relieve us from the burden of importing energy. On the other hand, some of the drilling that's been done to date has caused environmental problems, so it's very important as we proceed forward that we know we have a way of dealing with those problems. This report was set up to address both of those problems and to find a reasonable balance between them. With that background, let's proceed over to the public comment period of the question. Ron, I'm going to turn it over to you for the public comments.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to make a comment, please press the star followed by the one on your touchtone phone. You will hear a tone indicating you're in the queue. Please be advised that you will be restricted to 2 minutes for your comments. You may withdraw your comment from the queue at any time by pressing star two. If you're using a speakerphone today, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you would like to make a comment, please press star one at this time. Your first comment comes from David Gould, private investor. Please go ahead.
The central question relates to the risk of water and air contamination to human health, yet your panel is nobody with a health or toxicology background, yet you still promote shale gas extraction before the risks to health are fully known. We know that Frac Focus is a terribly greenwashed list, whereas a real list can be found on TEDx.org. But these endocrine-disrupting chemicals are a red herring because even in a theoretical world of chemical-free fracking, you dredge up materials like barium, strontium, and radioactive materials, which there are no cost-effective disposal methods, so they get dumped. A saying in surgery is, the solution to pollution is dilution, but that should not apply to fracking waste. In fact, the Achilles heel of fracking is there's no infrastructure to dispose of the waste. The nat gas industry makes nuclear look very safe and appealing by comparison. Your report has some misinformed conclusions. The so-called Stronger Review Board is nothing more than an industry front. They misleadingly imply endorsement by Sierra Club and EPA, simply because observers from those groups observed a single day of Stronger activity. Stronger has very little credibility at all. Next, how can you be dismissive of Bob Haworth's methane leakage research? Here's a man who led the Council of Scientific Society presidents, yet DOE knows better. Also, with the EIA projections related to shale gas, they're alarmingly huge and not very credible given the unsustainable concentration of wells that would be needed. I do wish EIA would stick to reporting the facts instead of making irresponsible predictions. Now back to human health for a moment. Why don't you study the impact first instead of after the fact when swaths of Pennsylvania become giant Superfund sites? Why don't you take a cue from the FDA, which has a very high safety bar, which must be met before a drug is approved? Mind you, that's for drugs taken voluntarily by the sick, not for air or water, which are hardly voluntary nor restricted to the sick. Finally, it makes no difference to human health if the mechanism of action hasn't been proven in terms of which route fracking contaminates water. If fracking were a drug or medical device, it would be rejected. Speaking to Dan Soder of DOE directly, I want to say that I could care less if contaminants are already in the soil and they just happen to be mobilized into water by fracking. Private well contamination is too often the end result of fracking, but this is swept under the rug due to the prevalence of non-disclosure agreements. Thank you.
Your next comment comes from John Detwiller from Marcellus Protest. Please go ahead.
Thank you. We're a grassroots organization of over 200 people and one of dozens of such organizations in the Marcellus Shale region. We submitted written testimony to the department today, and I'll just summarize it for this meeting. The complete testimony is online at www.marcellusprotest.org. The 90-day report is so far off track that we believe the only remedy is to start over again with a new panel. Therefore, Marcellus Protest calls upon the Secretary to reject the 90-day report for the following reasons and others detailed in our written testimony. And here I have to just take issue with the chairman's statement of the role of the subcommittee because that doesn't match the charge. Number one, the 90-day report fails to meet the Secretary's charge to the subcommittee to identify immediate steps to improve performance. Number two, the subcommittee has improperly redefined its task by choosing to focus on placating the public rather than ensuring the protection of the environment and the public health and safety as they were directed to do. And number three, the report abdicates to the industry itself the tasks to which the subcommittee was assigned. Furthermore, in view of the failure of this subcommittee to accomplish its assigned task and the complexity and urgency of this matter, as the Secretary very correctly noted in his May 5th charge, we further request that the Secretary reconstitute a new subcommittee and relaunch the task to which they were assigned, and the Secretary recommend to the President that the nation immediately stand down its development of shale gas until these critical issues can be addressed in a responsible fashion. Since the day that the subcommittee was formed, there has been a public outcry about the potential bias of many of its members. We believe that those fears have been realized in the subcommittee's work product and in its conduct, and it is now time for the Secretary to take aggressive remedial action to get this essential investigation back on track. Thank you.
Your next comment comes from Jeff Zimmerman from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability. Please go ahead.
Yes, I'd like to point out one thing in particular, and that is among the recommendations was a recommendation to managing short-term and cumulative impacts on communities, land use, wildlife, and ecologies. And this recommendation said that every effort should be made to plan for shale development impacts on a regional scale. And then it listed six items that ought to be examined in that process. My comment is that sounds very much to me like an environmental impact statement and a health impact assessment. We think both of those things should be done for the Marcellus Shale as a whole. That's why we have joined with the Chesapeake Bay Foundation and other local citizen and environmental groups to petition the Council on Environmental Quality to conduct a programmatic environmental impact statement and health impact assessment for the entire Marcellus Shale area. And in order to plan for shale development impacts on a regional scale, as is identified in the recommendation, you can't wait till the end of your study to do something about the ongoing impacts that are occurring already. That means you have to stop the process at the moment. Take a time out, as the prior speaker mentioned, and impose a moratorium on further permitting and development until the environmental impact and health impact assessments have been completed. Thank you.
Your next comment comes from Susan Van Dolson, Citizen. Please go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I've been working with several grassroots groups for about a year, and I attended the hearing in D.C. on July 13th. I'll read the statement that I sent this morning to your online comment, and then I have a couple of other key phrases from your report I would like to point out. Here's my statement. First, the release of the 40-page report on Thursday, August 11th, with a deadline for comments at NewsHQ at noon today, is not sufficient time for the public to read and comment. A four-day period, including a weekend in August, is simply not providing enough opportunity for people to digest this information and to comment. I urge you to extend the period for comments of this report to at least 1 week from today, August 22nd. My comment on this report itself is that I believe, despite the work of the subcommittee, the process did not address many of the issues raised by citizens of this country who have been affected by gas drilling, and many of the grassroots activists who have been committed to working on this issue for several years. I attended one of the public hearings in Washington, D.C., at my own expense as a citizen of this country, and felt that the panel's makeup was compromised by conflicts of interest, and the presentations were narrowly focused and did not cover many of the scientific and medical issues that have been raised. Fracking has become more prevalent in 34 states. Despite a $700,000 budget, there were no scientists who had done peer-reviewed studies present at these hearings. There were no medical doctors present, and there are many who could have provided excellent testimony, as was given at the New York State Assembly hearing on health effects of hydraulic fracturing on May 26th. We are witnessing air pollution, water pollution, illness, economic devastation, including loss of property, loss of tourism, and loss of quality of life. Decisions about the future of energy in our country should not be done in this sort of advocacy-based manner. particularly since the panel even recognizes that the 2005 exemptions to EPA rules have created dangerous issues. In your document, Annex A, charged the subcommittee, Dr. Chu states, quote, in January of 2011, the SEAB created a natural gas subcommittee to evaluate what role natural gas might play in the clean energy economy of the future, end quote. I contend that the recommendations provided in this report do not answer this charge. They do not address the underlying fact that hydraulic fracturing, even with, quote, best practices employed, is unsafe, and the costs far outweigh the benefits. It is not and should not be considered a part of a clean energy future. Do I have any more time, or is that 2 minutes?
That is over 2 minutes. Your next comment comes from Larissa Dirkska, retired. Please go ahead.
Retired pediatrician. Thank you very much. I sent my extensive comments on June 9th to Secretary Chu, and it did not appear that any of those comments were incorporated into the recommendations because, among other things, I recommended that exemptions be the federal exemptions from the major public health and environmental laws that are currently in place for the gas extraction industry should be reversed. You are leaving it up to the states at the moment to assure that public health is protected, and that's not being done. So that would be one recommendation that I think you really should follow up on if you're talking about public health, which you do repeatedly in this document that just came out on August 11th. Another aspect that I found rather distressing was that you had no input from any medical professionals. Not only that, were there no medical professionals on the board, but there was no input from the National Environmental Institute for Environmental Health Sciences, nor the CDC, nor the ATSDR. Yet you state in your document on page 8 that of the four areas of concern, you include public health, but it's not clear how that's going to be carried out. So I also am concerned about the chemicals used in hydraulic fracturing. You recommend more disclosure. You recommend that there be a summation of the chemicals on two sites, which are really not sites that I would strongly advocate, Frac Focus and Groundwater Protection Council. My recommendation is that you do the studies first to determine how toxic these chemicals are, how they can affect human health, and whether you should be using them at all. So thank you for this time.
Your next comment comes from Jeffrey Allison from Catskill Citizens for Safe Energy. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity to comment. In New York, we haven't had a cumulative impact assessment of shale gas drilling, and I think one is critical. I think you can do it based on industry statistics to determine how many wells will be drilled, their production rates, and make further assumptions based on what we know industry is currently doing. And I think this is the only way we can assess the full impact of what is going to be happening with this drilling. In addition, I think we need to understand all the risk impacts on local communities. We don't have any real assessment in this of what that will be in full. For example, where I live, tourism and agriculture is a major core economic issue here, and what will be the impact on the current economic drivers of our community. I think that if you look at the work of Susan Christofferson from Cornell University and Dr. Jeanette Barth, an independent economist, that you can see that there's a boom and bust cycle where communities are left worse off after drilling than before drilling. We definitely need to look as part of this in the quality of life issues that will occur, loss of rural character, heavy diesel trucks, air pollution, noise pollution, destruction of roads, spills, accidents, loss of markets for locally grown products are all part of that, and these impacts need to be included before the drilling should take place. Thank you.
Your next comment comes from Eric Melito from American Petroleum Institute. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I would like to commend the subcommittee for recognizing that natural gas is a cornerstone of the U.S. economy and will be for decades to come. In fact, the shale gas development in the Marcellus Shale has been a job creator and has created, to this point, at least 140,000 jobs with the potential to go up to 250,000 jobs. We can't forget that this is a clean-burning fuel. The environmental benefits include reduced emissions of carbon dioxide, nitrogen oxides, and sulfur oxides. And it is an affordable source of energy. We've seen the price of home heating decline significantly since the surge in shale gas development, and that's been a tremendous benefit for the average home heating consumer in Pennsylvania and other states around the country. We believe that it would be good to see the subcommittee make a recognition of the strong state regulatory programs in place in the oil and gas producing states across the country. Various states have been active in revising their regulations, including Texas, Wyoming, Colorado, New Mexico, and Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania alone has created four new regulatory packages, one on water withdrawal, one on wastewater disposal, and total dissolved solids, and new stronger drilling standards, and then buffers from drilling to development of other types of development, including residential. And we need to see a recognition of the federal programs. Unlike some of the statements we've heard already, the oil and natural gas industry is subject to the Safe Drinking Water Act. It is subject to the Clean Water Act. It is subject to the Clean Air Act. Waste is heavily regulated at the state level. I would also like to see additional recognition of some of the work that the industry has done in terms of moving toward water recycling, almost entirely moving toward water recycling in the Marcellus Shale, reducing or eliminating the use of pits, and across the board supporting the state programs that we've seen in place. Pennsylvania has increased inspectors from 88 to over 202, so we see things moving in the right direction. We also would urge the subcommittee to really identify the baseline from which the industry and is operating and from which the government is regulating. Such an analysis would demonstrate that many of these actions in the report have been taken or are underway. We believe that a lot of the best practices have been put in place. Industry has created API Standard 65 Part 2 on the isolation of potential flow zones during well construction. This is a document that will help operators ensure that methane migration will not occur if cementing and casing is done appropriately. It's something that's been adopted by the federal government for offshore drilling. It's a robust standard, and it's something that's already in place. But lastly, would like to state that the industry is dedicated to continuous improvement, which is a theme of the report, and we desire to address the concerns that have been raised in this report in all the areas, including water use and management, drilling practices, community engagement, emissions. But this must be done effectively with a recognition of the regulations and programs that are already in place.
Your next comment comes from Catherine Skopik from Environmental Task Force. Please go ahead.
Well, the initial paragraph talking about measures that can be taken to reduce the environment and improve the safety of shale gas production, I don't believe can actually be accomplished. I have 10 reasons why, and I'll just briefly highlight some of them. The cement used for casings is brittle and often cracks and causes leakage, which are not always identified. Once the frack water laden with toxic chemicals and sand is forced underground, there's no way of knowing where or how far that water travels. The explosions necessary to frack a well have repercussions beyond that which is intended. And underground explosions used for fracking have been known to cause earthquakes, and this is well documented and it is noted in your bibliography. However, there is little or no information in the actual report, and there is an omission of the full extent of this danger. For example, the Indian Point Nuclear Power Plant is located on two fault lines. And natural gas, actually methane, leaking into the atmosphere unburned, is more greenhouse gas producing than CO2, at least 25 times more so. And even though it doesn't last as long as CO2, the cumulative effect of continuing with the fracking process would lead us to exacerbated global warming, as has been documented by Robert Haworth of Cornell University. And although you've noted some of his study work in your bibliography, I see no evidence of his science in your actual report or its conclusions. And also, the harmful effects of natural gas hydraulic fracturing on people, animals, plants, water, land, and air has not been taken into consideration, and that people whose lives have already been harmed by this process need to be compensated, and there needs to be a reparation process in place, and those people who have already been harmed need to be compensated. And before any drilling proceeds, there needs to be a reparation process in place. And lastly, as we look to the past in an effort to learn from history, we see multiple examples of regulation not having prevented accidents. In fact, we learn that the best way to prevent accidents is by not engaging in the risky practice to begin with. For example, if we don't want to permanently poison our water supply, don't engage in any activity that might have that result. We have a moral and ethical responsibility to care for creation, all of creation. No matter how much we may want fossil fuels to support lifestyles we have grown used to, there are alternatives to fossil fuels. It's time to invest in and get used to
reading. Sorry to interrupt. This is the operator. We're
Thank
over
you.
The 2 minutes. Your next question, comment comes from Mike Lynch from Sierra Inc. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. I find these comments very interesting. I guess they boil down to almost everybody doesn't like shale gas, and they have a bunch of anecdotes and datum and occasional research to support that. I think this is an important issue. It needs a lot of study. It needs some good basic science on what pollution is actually occurring and what damage to environment and health is possible. I think that this study is just a very, very preliminary effort to get into that, but you do a good job of sort of identifying where we need to go from here. I do agree with some of the others that cost-benefit analysis needs to be done, but I think that has to take into account the fact that the benefit on this side is very huge, and I hope that as you do more studies, you can kind of reduce some of the uncertainty and the tendency of people to rely on either side to rely on things that are, shall we say, not that reliable. Thank you.
Your next comment comes from Stephen Cleghorn from Paradise Gardens and Farms. Please go ahead.
Yes, I run an organic farm in western Pennsylvania, and the one comment I have is that there's nothing in this study and nothing that I've been able to divine over the last year of looking at it that indicates there's any kind of scientific consensus that this unconventional drilling for methane gas cannot cause irreparable environmental harm. Without that scientific consensus that it cannot cause irreparable environmental harm, it really is an immoral activity to proceed putting our environment and our aquifers at risk. If we're going to put 200,000 holes into the shale under 50% of the landmass of Pennsylvania, not to mention the other states, we need to know before we ever do it that there's no way through those human-made fractures or through the existing natural fractures that the contents of the shale already existing or what we put into it cannot make its way to our aquifers. We don't know that yet. We don't have that scientific consensus. This practice, therefore, needs to be stopped until we do understand it. Thank you.
Your next comment comes from Ellen Harrison from Fleece. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. First, I would like to echo the fact that a four-day comment period at this time of the year is asking a lot, and the fact that the written comment period ended at noon, I didn't realize, and I was writing my comments as I was preparing for this call. So I hope you'll at least accept them till the end of the day. The couple of things that I wanted to say. One is, I thought that your comments about trying to get a national database was a good one. I thought that you needed to be aware, however, that the database that gets put together needs to include anecdotal incidents. They tend to be compiled by regulators who really don't believe when the public thinks there has been or when there has been water contamination. And so if they are strictly going to be a database of, quote, fully documented proven cases, it will be not very worthwhile. I also believe that when you talk about committees getting together and you have several different ones proposed on a committee of the regulators, et cetera, again, unless the impacted people, people who have tried to get regulators to pay attention to their problems, unless they're represented, that it will be a self-serving exercise. A couple of technical things. One is I don't see where the report has recognized the huge number of abandoned, unidentified wells. We have, I think it's over 40,000 in New York State. And we don't know where these are, and they are potential conduits between the deep layers and the surface aquifers, as well as the surface of the land, and that needs to be taken into account. Similarly, the report talks about the importance of putting wells in correctly, of doing your casing correctly, et cetera. Of course, that is critically important. But what it doesn't point out is my understanding in talking with experts such as Tony and Grapia and others, basically we are relying on these cementings, these casings, to last forever because we are leaving toxic, carcinogenic, endocrine-disrupting chemicals down below. If we don't want them to make access to the surface, there cannot be a conduit. So the abandoned wells are potentially a conduit, and the fact that cement will deteriorate over time. And what are we going to be doing to preparing for perpetuity of having shoved these chemicals below? I was in the waste disposal.
Sorry to interrupt. This is okay. The operator. We're now over 2 minutes.
Thank you.
Your next comment comes from Renee Hernandez from West Virginia for a moratorium on Marcellus. Please go ahead.
I would like to state that we are a grassroots organization that is determined to stop Marcellus shale drilling. Our state has been one of the most exploited states for energy in this United States. And not only do we have Marcellus shale drilling going on, but of course we have the ongoing process of mountaintop removal that has caused great destruction of our water and our air. We formed in May after finding out that there was a rig being placed 1,500 feet from our water source. A judge just recently overturned our city's ban. We are demanding that the United States government propose a moratorium so that a study can be completed. Why would you allow a practice without seeing what happens with these chemicals? Not just the chemicals that are in the water, they are spewing into the air. There are truck accidents everywhere. I did a tour in Wetzel County, West Virginia last week, and while I was on the tour, there was another accident. There was a fatality last week from a fracking truck falling over the mountainside 150 feet, and there were 5 accidents alone in 3 or 4 days. We are very concerned, and I particularly am concerned, being a healthcare professional, about the health effects of Marcellus shale drilling and the chemicals that are being dispersed into our water system. And trust me, they are being dispersed. And this is going to be happening around the world. This destruction of our water table is completely immoral. I stand for protecting creation. Thank you.
Your next comment comes from Bill Godsey from Geologic Environmental Services. Please go ahead.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to comment. Just to let you know, I am an environmental scientist with nearly 30 years of professional experience in this industry. And some of the things I would look at from the committee's report, I would think that, you know, there were some good things there, that the recognition of shale development as a huge opportunity that can be safely and responsibly developed, I think that is a good point. Disclosure about frac fluids and baseline water quality measurement, those are important items, and many states are already pursuing this, and other states are bound to follow. One thing I think we're doing is with this report is we're overlooking the state regulators. I have past experience as a state regulator myself. State regulators are very much involved in what's going on in fracking activity. The report doesn't support funding for state resources. You know, some examples like Stronger and the Groundwater Protection Council. So I think regardless of whether or not you feel those organizations, you know, meet or exceed your expectations. I think those are something to look at, especially when you're having unfunded mandates to the states for this. A couple other points I'd like to make that there are many recommendations in the report that I think, one, increase administrative costs, and two, they encourage redundant standard settings, and three, they weaken local control, and I think that each state ought to have you know, its own control on its own resources. Don't seem to see anything about cost-benefit assessments to prioritize the proposal for states, you know, and these states already have strained budgets. One of the things I saw also was a favor to acknowledging the state regulators and the important roles that these state regulators play. Again, these guys are on the front line, and it's very difficult to centralize things in Washington versus in the individual states with the individual environmental and regulatory regimes that are already there. As far as a new organization for best practices, I think there are plenty good industry standards out there, other things that are already there, and I really don't see the need for a duplication of a new organization. Creating an information portal without a clear purpose, that is going to be an expensive, burdensome repository with very little benefit. I think, just like some of the comments I've listened to prior to my comment about chemicals being released into the water table and things of this nature and leaking casings, the problem being is, give us some documented cases of these things.
Sorry to interrupt, Mr. Godsey. We're now over the 2 minutes.
All right, sir. Thank you for my time.
This is all the time that we'll have for comments at this point. I would now like to turn it over to Mr. John Deutsch. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Bill, Mr. Chairman, for convening this. I want to thank the members of the Secretary of Energy Advisory Board for taking the time to listen to and evaluate our 90-day report. I also want to thank the members of the public who have dialed in to hear the discussion of this report and for the comments that have been offered. And it's my understanding, Mr. Chairman, that we are going to continue to accept comments up through November, which is the next 90-day period of the existence of our panel. And this 4-day period is just in front of this meeting today, but we will continue to accept comments from the public and evaluate them as they come in. What I would like to do, Bill, is to spend 5 or 6 minutes summarizing the report. It's been distributed to the members of the CAB, but I do want to give it some focus and content from the perspective of the committee. And let me remind you that the subcommittee members included Sue Tierney, Katie McGinty, Fred Krupp, Mark Zoback, Dan Juergen, Steve Heidich, and myself, a quite broad set of backgrounds and expertise in environmental, oil and gas industry, academic, and technical experience. And I would begin by saying that in my judgment, this is a balanced study. Why do I call it balanced? Because as you've seen, and as if you've read the press reports of the report, you know that it is being criticized both from those people who are pro-development and both from those people who are very concerned about the environment. And I want to say that all of us on the subcommittee were unanimous in our recommendations. In fact, there was very strong feeling that the recommendations that we put forward were necessary both to protect the environment and to permit shale gas development to go responsibly forward. Having said that, each person on the committee would have written it a different way because of our different backgrounds. So what is important is for me, what I want to stress to you, is our common strong conviction on the recommendations. And the way the report is phrased is a balance between many different points of view. I think it is a responsible and effective presentation, but each one of us would have done it slightly differently. Now let me make a remark about the charge that we addressed and how we addressed it. The first was that Secretary Chu asked us to identify those measures which would reduce potential environmental impacts from shale gas production presently and as it goes forward. We notice that there are, and note, that there are tremendous potential economic benefits from shale gas production across the country, but we were not intending to do a net assessment. Our job was to look at measures that would be able to reduce the environmental burden of this development. Secondly, we only considered shale gas production. We did not consider all oil and gas production. Many of the judgments, observations we make might be extended to oil and gas operations in general by some individuals. We would caution against that because we reached our judgment based on our investigation, which was from shale gas production and not all types of oil and gas production. Third, I would like to mention that there are tremendous regional differences between the shale deposits across the country, from heavily liquid-based shale deposits in North Dakota, Texas, Wyoming, Colorado, Arkansas, Pennsylvania, New York, very different shale deposits, and therefore different regional differences have got to be respected as one manages this environmental subject. Fifth, we made the judgment almost immediately not just to concern ourselves with the environmental effects of fracturing, hydraulic fracturing, but all the environmental effects attendant with shale gas production, including the surface activities that attend hydraulic fracturing, including the water issues that come from gathering, using, and disposing of the water, the cumulative regional and impacts that take place, the impacts on communities from the truck traffic, from the noise, from the activities. So we did consider and think it is important to consider all the environmental effects of shale gas production. And finally, Mr. Chairman, I want to stress that our charge did not include an assessment of the regulatory structure, the balance or adequacy of federal or regional regulations in carrying out the public trust in defending the environment and protecting the environment. We were not asked and we did not examine different aspects of the adequacy or needs or opportunities for improvement in either federal or state regulation. What is the unifying theme of our study? The unifying theme in our study is that we should adopt an approach which involves three steps: increased measurements, increased field measurements, public disclosure of those measurements, and allowing those measurements to shape best practices in the field. If those three steps are followed, it is our view that it will permit a monitoring of the progress. Year by year, are we moving towards reducing environmental impact, managing it better? Allow us to measure monitor the progress as we go through the period of development of this tremendous resource. So the key to our approach is more field measurements, public disclosure of those measurements, have those measurements inform the actions of industry, have those measurements inform the actions, the responsibility of regulators, have those measurements made publicly available so the public knows what is happening to these activities and to the environmental effects. We made a number of recommendations. I do not want to go through them at all. I am just going to list them for you, what I believe that the important recommendations were. We did make some recommendations, which we believe strongly, for more support to state regulators in some of the activities that are going on. We believe that those activities, whether it's by this group Stronger or by the Groundwater Protection Council, effort to do risk-based management systems, the exchange of information and communication between them will lead to a stronger regulatory structure, which is, after all, the bedrock of protecting the public interest in this matter. We made several recommendations about improving air quality, which is only now beginning to be reviewed by the Environmental Protection Agency. We made additional product recommendations about water quality, which will EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, has a study underway which will begin to formulate the federal regulations for water quality beginning in 2014. We proposed full disclosure for all chemical additives in fracturing fluids and fracturing liquids. We know that there's progress has been made on this, but we think that the progress should go more rapidly, and that this issue of the lack of public information, complete public disclosure of the chemical composition of fracturing fluids is not a wise thing. We did propose the creation of an industry-led shale gas technical organization dedicated to developing and diffusing best practices across the industry. And finally, we made some recommendations about research and development. Our committee report represents 90 days of very, very serious devotion by all members of the committee. We had extremely good participation and many, many both public meetings and sessions where we worked out this private report. As you're aware, Mr. Chairman, we are have another 90 days to pursue some of the matters that we've brought up in that work schedule, which will begin, I hope, very shortly after Labor Day, will depend very much upon the reaction that the report receives from Secretary Chu. So that is my brief summary of this report. And what I would like to do is, if it's all right with you, Bill, is to ask Sue and then Dan to add any comments they wish, and then allow you to ask any members of the CAB ask any questions they would like, or make any suggestions that they would wish to offer to us, if that's all right with you.
Well, hearing no response from our chairman, this is Sue Tierney, and I'll just spend 1 minute. And
Sue, yes? I'm sorry, my microphone is muted.
I apologize.
I was just going to say I agree exactly with proceeding as John described, but I want to thank John, thank the other members of the subcommittee for the very intensive work that you've been undergoing for the last 3 months. It was a historic effort, and we thank you for it. And now, Sue, turn over to you for your comments.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate that. And frankly, that's the point that I wanted to make, too. John Deutsch spent countless hours in herding us cats to get this done on time. And I think when he described the fact that there was an intense effort, lively debates, we had different points of view, but in the end, this document reflects the consensus and common ground of people who have very different points of view about all of these issues and very different perspectives drawn from professional and personal backgrounds, some of which are deep in federal and state environmental regulations, some of which are very deep in understanding of some of these drilling practices, et cetera. So I want to underscore what John said, which is that we worked hard to try to find a balanced report, and I stand ready to try to answer any questions that you all might have. Thank you. And by the way, I also want to thank members of the public for their participation throughout this process, both during our meetings, during our field hearing, and in providing comments on the websites. Thank you.
Dan?
Yes, this is Dan Juergen. Thank you. I'd like to also thank the fellow members of the subcommittee, CAB, and indeed the citizens who have shared their viewpoints and perspectives and comments on this report, which I understand will continue to come in, and thank those who made their comments over the telephone today. When our committee was, as noted, was set up in January, and the president then set our charge, which would recognize the role of gas in our economy. It's 25% of our total energy, and shale gas has grown very quickly from being 2% of our production to just about 30%. And as the president said, this has great economic and strategic impact and everything from jobs to energy security to the revitalization of the American economy. At the same time, it has these major environmental questions and effects, potential, as well as what's unfolding now and the need to get one's arms around that. And the emphasis in the report is, John Deutsch, is that it, as this proceeds, it needs to be done properly. And it has to be acceptable to the public, to citizens. There are two points that I wanted to make. One, we heard from one or two people on the phone about the constraints on state governments, and of course we know the constraints on the federal budget, but this does impact on our recommendations in two ways. As a couple of callers in made clear, there is a system of state regulation, very important state-federal relationship here that is part of the larger nature of our federal system. In a time of budgetary constraints, it's very important that the state regulatory system that is close to what's happening be properly funded and have the resources they need, and we heard some of that, but that is something that certainly stands out and the kind of the role of the states. The second that John just touched upon, and again it gets constrained, is the area of research and development. After all, what's happened with shale gas is really the advance of technology. And although we're very mindful of the constraints on the budget, we do see that there is a important role for federally supported R&D that addresses these kinds of environmental questions and issues and concerns that have been discussed, both to understand them better and at the same time to also actually address them. And one area we allude to in the report is the potential to very substantially reduce the amount of water that is used in this process, which would be, water is obviously one of the really key things. So I think that as a carryover, and this is really for CAB, which looks at these R&D questions, and for the Secretary when he considers it, is looking and defining what the research and development agenda is and how to implement it in a very expeditious way. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. I'd now like to turn to the other board members, the other CAB board members, to get their comments.
Bill, Chad Holliday, commenting, I'd just like to compliment the work of the committee. I think they've done an outstanding job. And I would just like to highlight their proposal for an industry production organization dedicated to continuous improvement and best practice. I think that's exactly the right way to go. That's my only comment, Bill.
Thank you. Any other comments from other committee members?
Yeah, this is Frances Beinecke speaking, and I have a few comments. First of all, I really appreciate the work that the committee put into this. 90 days, I think, is a short period of time to address the complexity of issues that have been raised around natural gas development. And I think you've done a very comprehensive job identifying the key issues. I particularly appreciate on page 8 the several paragraphs that deal with the urgency of addressing environmental consequences, because I think, you know, we continue to hear both in the comments today and the public comments that have been submitted how serious the concerns are across the country about the environmental consequences of hydraulic fracturing and the other activities associated with natural gas development. To me, the most important thing is what happens with these recommendations. The president, in his request for the subcommittee, really identified or asked for identifying immediate actions that could be taken. And I think, and John Deutsch, this is perhaps to you, but I think that you've identified a whole series of steps that do need to be taken on air and water quality disclosure, collecting data, improving best practices on behalf of industry. And I think even more importantly, you recognize the role of environmental regulation to ensure the protection of public health and safety. But I think we need a timeline and action plan to get these recommendations operational, and perhaps we could recommend to the Secretary that such an action plan with a timetable get developed, because I think that's the most critical issue, certainly from the public's standpoint, and I'm sure from your standpoint too, having spent 90 days putting all this material down, what happens, what the next step is, both for the state and federal regulators and for the industry to ensure that these initial steps that you've identified get adopted, I think is just the critical thing that we as a committee should be focusing on.
Thank you. Bill, may I say a couple of words here?
Please do, John.
First of all, Francis, I thank you for these comments. You are absolutely correct to say that the, and as Dan Juergen also mentioned, that we, everybody in this committee is strongly believes that the regulation has to be here to protect the public interest, and there's much to be done there as well. And I also would like to say to you that very much on my mind is how the department and more broadly the administration responds to this report and opens the door to us to point to certainly steps which can be taken immediately to implement some of these recommendations. Some of them will take longer time. But as the committee went through its deliberations, we did have, among the many that are in here, a double handful which could be implemented beginning right away. And we do hope that our work plan in our second 90 days will be exactly, as you said, identifying those particular immediate opportunities, who would be responsible for doing it in the federal government, and setting a understandable time schedule for getting it done. In that regard, I forgot to mention, Francis, that we weren't only considering DOE in this, whether we're talking about R&D or whether we're talking about some of these other programs. We're very conscious there are other agencies of the government, the Environmental Protection Agency, the Bureau of Land Management, and the Department of Interior, the United States Geological Survey, all of which have an important role to play here and would be part of a response of an immediate kind that you're suggesting.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, John and Francis. Are there comments from other board members?
Yes. So, Mr. Chairman, this is Nick D'Onofrio.
May I say a few words?
Please.
Yes. I'm going to be brief because all the good words have already been taken and everybody said incredible similar things, and I agree with them all. To this last point that Francis and John brought up, I would simply add I'm very impressed and focused on this this collaboration that's going on with the public. The fact that you we heard from them first, I thought was a terrific move on your part, and the fact that we've had so many participate in the public hearings. But more importantly, John, as we go forward, and I know you will do this for the next 90 days, there are many important things that were said earlier that are worth thinking about and are of value. And I, to the people on the phone who made those comments and who are submitting those comments, I know they'll get factored in as well. I think we're headed in the right direction, and I applaud you all. Thank you.
Bill, Ralph Cicero.
Go ahead, Ralph.
Thank you. I wanted to thank whoever did it on the committee or the Department of Energy staff for providing us lists of public comments and summaries of them. In fact, some of them before the weekend, so I was able to read all of those. And in the sense that Nick D'Onofrio just said, I think the process has been a very good one. And thanks to the committee work under John for doing all of that extra work as well. One of the speakers on the telephone today in the public comment period cited several kinds of federal laws and regulations which he stated already apply to these kinds of extraction processes that will be applied and are being applied to shale gas. It might be useful for the report, perhaps in the next 90 days, to give a brief outline of what existing federal law and regulatory structure does exist to provide a base under which all the state and regional work will be functioning.
Ralph, first of all, you're exactly right. And we on the committee, as we learned, and some of us learned more and some of us already knew a lot, we had two ex-state regulators, Sue Tierney and Katie McGinty, on there. We learned a lot about the current activities of the regulators. And we have observations on that. But I want to remind you that we were explicitly asked not to go into the regulations for two reasons. One, the Department of Energy is not the principal agency involved in that. And if we were going to do what you said, we would have to have, I believe, some additional membership on our committee of people who have a regulatory design background to augment the people we already have. And it would take a great deal closer collaboration, although we had very good relations with the Department of Interior and EPA going forward. But we would have to have our charge from Secretary Chu or others broadened to really spend the time to do the work that would need to be done to do the very correct task that you outline.
Well, it is, I'm sure, a very, very hard job. I'm just thinking that an impression that people can gain here is that everything is going to be up to the local and state and industrial consortium capabilities with no underlying federal capability or responsibility. And I think that would be erroneous.
Absolutely, absolutely. But the work needs to be done to really...
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
The second comment, and this is my last one, although I would like to send in a whole bunch of things about, you know, typos here and there that have to be cleaned up. But my second point is about the R&D recommendations you've made in the report. I think it's terrific because the whole reliance on objective data, and as you said in several places, the most direct kinds of measurements that are possible are the best, and then the disclosure of data, in fact, even publication of them, I think that's just essential. On the measurement of the emissions of volatile substances, it turns out there is no direct measurement of emissions. So what researchers have done over the years on related issues has been very smart and intelligent, but sometimes not comparable. So I just urge that in the research agenda, there should be some emphasis on coming up with measurement techniques and protocols which could be comparable from site to site.
I think it's a very good point, and we are aware of our of just taking a first step in that direction. It is a complicated, but we do need some data here.
Great.
Mr. Chairman, this is Sue Tierney again. May I just make one response to Ralph's comments about the federal and state regulatory overlay and just add to what John said a minute ago?
Please go ahead, Sue.
The task of laying out or almost mapping on paper what the regulatory structure looks like is so unbelievably complicated, in large part because what we have here is overlays of subject matter regulation that have a strong history of either being more like a state area of interest, and some are more federal, but all of the issues overlay each other in different ways in different places. And as a result of that, it's very hard to come up with a common single map that tells you who does what in terms of implementing federal and state laws of what nature. As an example, the state regulatory pinnings of the or underpinnings in this area are really very much tied to land use and property rights regulation, and that's the leg that has been stood on for so many years in different states. And as a result of that, that ends up being an area which is not very federal, as we know. And then certainly state and federal environmental public health laws. In fact, many of the public health laws are state historically as well, but many of the environmental regulations come from both state laws that vary across the states with regard to what emissions are controlled and what are not. And then there are various overlapping federal laws that greatly affect one particular spot. One of the biggest areas of difference is that the western part of the United States has such a large body of oil and gas minerals on public land, making it inherently a federal activity and highly regulated by the federal government, whereas in the eastern half of the United States, it's most of the unconventional gas resources are on private property and then do not have that similar kinds of Department of Interior direct regulation over the terms and conditions of extraction. So, Ralph, it sounds like a simple request, but it is unbelievably complicated, even if we did have the assignment to go into this area. We are very humbled with appreciation of the many ways in which regulations exist in this area, but also in sympathy with those who try to understand the way it works, because it will be very difficult for citizens to gain quickly an understanding of this area.
Maybe that should be stated.
Mr. Chairman, it's Michael McQuaid. Can I comment?
Mike, go ahead.
First of all, John, Sue, and Dan, on behalf of the rest of the committee, my compliments for a really terrific piece of work in a very short period of time. And I know that the next 90 days won't be any easier, so maybe compliments ahead of time on that. Also, in particular, I think the public input section, there's been a lot of terrific process that's gone in place in addition to the public hearings and the comment sections along the way, and I know that will continue, so very good there. I'd focus only on one topic area, which is the recommendation around an industry-driven organization for best practice sharing. I think that that's very clearly the right thing to do, and I think the comments in the text about additional membership from non-industry participants in that I think is a good recommendation along the way. I think the comments that that while that is driven largely by the vested interest of people to adopt best practices for efficiency purposes, I think will drive that. I also think, as noted in the comment, that does need to be juxtaposed against the proper regulatory structure to make sure that those two things go hand in hand. And one thing, room to think about, and John, maybe direct to you, is over the next 90 days, there were some very good recommendations for potential areas to focus on that initial organization. But maybe the subcommittee can take a look at perhaps putting some framework around how quickly that has to come up to speed, the time frame on which that organization needs to be in place. There's some vital interests here, both in terms of the industry itself, the efficiency of the industry, but also in protecting the environment that I think need to be looked at very quickly. So some guidance or recommendations on how rapidly that organization needs to come into play is possibly a worthwhile consideration for the subcommittee.
Good point.
Thank you, Mike. Any other comments from other board members?
Well, Mr. Chairman, this is Frances Beinecke again. I have one other comment for the next phase, if I may.
Please. Go ahead.
There have been, and this is to you, John, there have been many comments both today and then in writing before, and we've heard certainly at NRDC many, many concerns about the public health impacts and the health impacts associated with natural gas fracturing in communities across the Marcellus Shale. I encourage you to be looking at these public health issues in the next phase, and if there's research that needs to be done or medical professionals that need to be heard from to address that aspect as well.
Francis, I have enlisted one of my colleagues at MIT, Michael Greenstone, to undertake a research project on looking at what data is available, beginning in Pennsylvania, on the correlation between shale gas drilling activity and trends in public health, either through water or air. I will make sure that the connection between shale gas activity, shale gas production activity, and health, first of all, we look at what is known and what has been what studies have been done, and we will look to sponsor some additional studies which look at that, because I agree with you, it's certainly an issue that is on the public's mind, and we have not seen, although we haven't looked that comprehensively, at what is available on this issue. But you're quite right to point that out as a very significant area for further study, which incidentally is another place where studies by research supported by the federal government would be important if it could be afforded.
Very good. And there are two other issues that I just wanted to bring up quickly that were two issues that the Offshore Oil Committee that I was on last year looked at extensively. One was the whole issue of the safety culture, in our case, of the offshore oil and gas industry. And we made strong recommendations that a more comprehensive corporate safety culture needed to be adopted offshore. I don't know whether that's something that your committee has looked at for the natural gas operations, but if not, I would encourage you to do it. And then the other is looking at increased financial responsibility requirements for oil and gas or for gas activities to cover reclamation costs and potential costs of corrective action, well plugging and abandonment, and a whole series of issues so that communities can be assured that these issues will be addressed over the long term.
In our discussions and in my study of it, I have not seen any evidence of an inadequate safety. If you're speaking here about worker safety mm-hmm. and safety around the facility and things like that, I have seen no evidence of a systematic inattention to safety practices. And as you may know, Francis, these activities are actually, because of their expense, are unlike most oil and gas activities, are in the hands of larger oil and gas companies, and they normally do have on land activities more of attention to safety. But I do not think that there is the safety issue in the same way that there was.
That there was offshore.
As it was offshore, but it didn't stick out at us like some of the other things, air and water quality issues that we mm-hmm. looked at did.
Right. Thank you.
Any other board member comments? If not, then let me summarize.
Mr. Chairman, this is R. Rosenfeld. I've been listening attentively. I won't stay on the line very long because I'm at the quietest place I can find in Cleveland Airport, and it's not very quiet. But I do want to compliment the committee on its a very convincing work, and I hope it can do an impressive job in the next 90 days.
Thank you, Art. Other comments from board members? If not, then let me summarize as follows. I want to start off by again giving thanks to John Deutsch and the subcommittee for the extraordinary effort they put in the last 90 days. Secondly, I'd like to thank the people from the public who made their very thoughtful comments today and ask the subcommittee to pay careful attention to those comments in their work in the next 90 days. Third, I propose the following actions: that we send this report to the secretary, we inform him there is a consensus of the subcommittee on the report, a unanimous view of the subcommittee on the report. We inform him of the comments of the board members that have been made at the meeting today. And Amy, I'd like to ask you to make a summary of those comments to pass on to the secretary. And we assure that the secretary gets a transcript of the very thoughtful comments we have heard from the public on this subject. And with those points, then I would like to propose that we go ahead and send this report to Secretary Chu. Are there any comments from any of the board members on those set of actions?
Sounds terrific.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this is Francis. I just have one comment. If we could add a sentence in the transmittal that really focuses on the need for an action plan to move these recommendations into actual adoption and implementation, I think that's just a critical issue.
Francis, I accept that.
Thank you.
Any other comments of board members?
I agree with
yes.
the plan.
Yes, please. This is Sue Tierney, just with a brief comment. One of the difficulties of an action plan is that, as you know, we're making recommendations through CEAB to the Secretary of Energy. He is a federal officer and is one of many, and obviously I heard the comments and agree with them that this involves a number of issues besides those within the authorities of the Department of Energy. It is also the case, however, that many of the recommendations we made are directed toward people in the industry, companies, as well as regulators in the states and interested parties in all of the communities that are affected by this area. So I think it does require a bit of careful and nuanced navigation to figure out how one does an action plan that is so broad in terms of the number of people that we hope actually run with many of the recommendations that we have. Thank you.
That's a good point, Sue. The Secretary of Energy does have limited authority in some of these areas, but on the other hand, he can be provide guidance and leadership for the whole government in this area.
Perfect.
Well, are you suggesting then, Bill and Sue, that that recommendation should take into account the, you know, within the realm of his authority or something like that?
Excuse me, this is John Deutsch. I think that what Francis is really asking for is for us to be a little inventive and careful, but explore what's possible. And we may, if this really becomes a focus of our next 90-day work, we can do some proselytizing ourselves at the working levels of these other agencies and perhaps make some progress that way as well. But we would have to spend some time, as Sue properly points out, finding out where the leverage points really are here to get moving quickly.
Thank you, John. I would also add that the president originally asked for this particular analysis, and not only are we sending it on to the secretary, but presumably the administration as a whole has an interest in it too. So I don't think that the plan should be limited to what the DOE authority is, but really
that does make it
authority across the government is.
Yeah.
Agreed. And my only point in raising this was just to remind all of us that it is involved not only the federal interagency work, but also all of those external non-federal parties as well.
Yeah, okay, good. But it would be good to put this in the letter, Bill.
Good, let's do that. Any other issues or questions? Do we have a concurrence then on that the course of action?
I think so.
Yes.
Okay, Amy, would you take the appropriate actions then to record these actions we agreed upon today and to be sure this report gets sent to the Secretary with the comments we have discussed?
Yes, sir.
I'm ready to declare this meeting adjourned. John Deutsch, do you have any other reasons we should continue?
No, Bill, I thank you. I thank members of the committee, and I thank members of the public. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Amy, for your help on this.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation and for using AT&T Executive Teleconference. You may now disconnect.